many a young man down. And with a plan to kill Abraham, they were Kentucky bound. They burned the Midway Depot,
the Midway
and
Depot,
stormed town to town. A trail of blood and fire was left for trial to hunt them down.
Silent riders, the bloodiest of them all.
On August 15, 1971, the first in a five-part historical documentary series was played on WAKY Radio in Louisville. The 10 a.m. Sunday morning program ran 30 minutes. There would be three more 30-minute programs in the series, and one running 45 minutes. The Silent Riders would trace a portion of the history of Kentucky during the closing days of the Civil War and the period just after the surrender of the Confederate forces. The programs would generally trace the career of guerrilla leader William Clark Quantrill from his birth in Ohio to his death in Louisville, Kentucky. There would also be a portion dealing with the activities of Frank and Jesse James in Kentucky and the theory that Jesse wasn't shot as history tells it.
There's good evidence to show that an event in 1865 here in Kentucky officially marked the end of the Civil War, months after General Lee's surrender. The event was the final surrender of an organized Confederate force. Of more significance, perhaps, is the battle which resulted in that surrender.
The preface would be presented by Joe Creason, the Courier-Journal's highly respected Kentucky historian columnist.
It was fought not more than 35 miles south of Louisville in Spencer County.
As indicated by Creason, the documentary series would focus on the battle in Kentucky near Louisville in which Quantrill was mortally wounded and the surrender of his band of guerrillas, the final surrender of an organized Confederate force. The documentary series would offer much more than chronological tracing of guerrilla activities. There would be original music, including a ballad written by the producer-director. There would be sound effects to enhance the narrative. There would be recreations with University of Louisville actors, such as the recreation depicting Quantrill's trip to Richmond in search of a colonel's commission.
The warfare is desperate, but everything in the service is desperate and requires desperate measures. To succeed, your government must put up an unceasing and desperate fight.
Of course, war has its amenities and refinements, but in the 19th century, it is simple barbarism to talk of a black flag.
Barbarism.
And this recreation, as we pick up from the narration.
People, the facts, and the event are history.
Hey, men, we're looking for a guide.
Where are you off to, Captain?
We're trying to reach the Ohio River.
What's your outfit?
We're attached to the 4th Missouri Cavalry. I'm Captain Clark.
It was in connection with this recreation that the author corrected the book Quantrill and the Border Wars by William Elsie Connolly. Again, from the narration.
Incidentally, Connolly mistakenly identified the Kentucky soldier as Townsley and repeated the mistake a second time in his book. His name was Lounsley. Edwards says Frank James shot Barnett.
There were other recreations, such as this one.
It was January 29th, a Monday morning, when Quantrill and his Silent Riders entered Danville. They wore Union uniforms. Again, in this recreation, the spoken lines are fictitious. The event itself is reported in the War of the Rebellion records.
All right, everybody out!
The Ballad of the Silent Riders, written by the producer-director and performed by a Louisville trio, was used throughout the documentary, as indicated here.
Five horses captured, along with the equipment. Some 30 to 35 men escaped. Most were said to have run barefoot into the woods through a fresh snow. They ran toward Parksville, or Hayesville. Among those escaping on foot and barefoot, William Clark Quantrill.
While camping down near Houstonville, along the Little South Fork, a squad of men under Bridgewater rode down on Captain Clark.
Still another recreation adds new facts for a historical event when Quantrill stopped at a central Kentucky home to visit a young woman.
Captain, I hope you're enjoying the tea.
It's just right, Nanny. I bet you'd make some fellow a good wife.
The recreation is followed by the author's examination of the event.
Quantrill noticed Nancy flipping the pages of an album.
WCQ.
That was the version of the story from Quantrill's mother. However, a direct descendant of Nancy Dawson at Bloomfield says it didn't happen that way. Emily Houston Dawson says the story from her great-aunt Nancy was that Quantrill left the poem, which was written on a piece of paper, folded on a table for Nancy to find. A copy of the poem supplied by the Kenneth Spencer Research Library at Lawrence.
In order to be purely objective, producer-director had to become a genealogist overnight to trace family trees to provide background for the documentary series. That example follows.
Edwin was the second born and second son of Richard and Martha Terrell's seven children. Edwin was descended of English blood. The first of his family lineage to settle in Kentucky came from Spotsylvania County, Virginia in 1787 and made their home in Montgomery County.
Many descendants of persons who were directly connected with the Silent Riders were interviewed for the documentary series, and some heretofore unknown facts were brought out. Some new history for Kentucky, such as this report.
It seems Quantrill and his men were riding in front of Dougherty's Lane, across the Taylorsville-Bloomfield Road from the James Hetty Wakefield Farm at Wakefield Station. Wagons loaded with logs headed for the mill at Fairfield were coming out of the lane onto the main road at the same time. Joe Maury Wakefield, James Hetty Wakefield's grandson, tells what happened.
Well, it's some two wagons, I believe, had seven horses hitched to them. And Quantrill and these fellas stopped and they got in an argument. Quantrill killed seven of these horses, killed them with a sword.
And Joe Maury Wakefield says the sword Quantrill used to slay the seven horses will continue to be handed down in his family. He has it now. Quantrill gave it to his father. Joseph William Wakefield was 14. He was walking home from school. Joe Maury doesn't know exactly when the slaying of the horses occurred, although it was in the spring of 1865. He says it might have been the day Quantrill was mortally wounded. That fight took place before noon, however, and it is doubtful the young Joseph Wakefield would have been coming home that soon. Several pictures of the sword were sent to Harold L. Peterson, chief curator of the National Park Service and the nation's foremost sword expert. Peterson identified it as an 1820 to 1835 vintage sword.
Again, the ballad was used as the actual battle in which Quantrill was mortally wounded in Kentucky was recreated. The documentary provides the most complete account of the battle to date, including names of participants and realistic casualty reports based upon official reports and comparative analysis.
Moving down by Smiley Town, the rain did start to fall. And the captain and his outlaws moved on toward Wakefield Stalls. They settled down to rest and joke on that quiet May morn, unaware that the Union boys rode full down on the barn. Silent Riders, Silent Riders, the bloodiest of them all.
Ed Terrell and his 30 men rode up the lane. Unslinging their Spencer carbines or drawing their pistols. Edwards claimed Terrell had 120 men. Burt said there were 120.
Near the end of the portion of the series dealing with Quantrill, the author notes two Kentucky Historical Society markers to be incorrect.
Accidentally wounded, he died August 23rd, 1866. It may be noted that Kentucky Historical Highway marker number 1129 in Shelbyville is incorrect in several respects. It identifies the Armstrong Hotel as the scene of the slaying of guerrilla leader Ed Terrell during a raid on the town in 1864. As noted, this was not where Terrell was shot. He was not slain when shot, but mortally wounded. The year was 1866, not 1864, and his name is spelled T-E-R-R-E-L-L, not T-E-R-R-I-L-L, as indicated on the marker. Terrell's name is also misspelled on marker 505 at Wakefield.
In the last part of the series, the attention turns to the James boys. There are eight voices other than the narrator on this part of the series. One is that of 96-year-old Bob Croom talking about the James boys saving the life of a gang member who would become sheriff of Nelson County, Kentucky. The comment gives an alternate possibility to a historical report which indicated Jesse James may have been with Quantrill when Quantrill was mortally wounded at Wakefield, Kentucky.
Croom Adams knew Donnie Pence and heard the story of Pence's wounding and rescue this way.
Jesse James and Frank and oh, and the Merrill boys and let's see, I'll be a fella Cole and different ones. And the story is that they made a raid up in a high one time. Well, I'm sure they did because I've heard all my life that they, during the Civil War...
A 94-year-old, Willie Offutt of Russellville, gave a reliable version of the James Gang's alleged robbery of the Russellville, Kentucky Bank.
Robin Hood reputation among black residents of Russellville.
Jesse James, they robbed a long bank. And then they go out there on Russellville Pike, and old folks there, husband is dead, and they would tear off their home places. These old widow women, husband is dead, and they would tear off the dead on their places.
He stole from the rich and gave to the poor. He'd a hand and a heart and a brain. Jesse had...
A rare tape of the last man who claimed to be Jesse James, J. Frank Dalton, was heard on the program. The portion of the documentary about the James boys probed the theory that Dalton was Jesse James, presenting evidence from both sides of the argument. The many different lyrics to the James ballad also were heard.
This is the actual voice of J. Frank Dalton, recorded by Rudy Torelli at Stanton, Missouri, September 6th, 1949.
I was in the stable. What I can remember about that, I think I was carrying them.
Youthful recruits for his gang, Charles and Bob Ford, had been staying with Jesse for several days. After breakfast, on the infamous day, the three entered the living room. Jesse removed his guns and laid them on a bed, as Settle and other authors report. Then he stepped up on a chair to straighten and dust the picture. Bob Ford quickly drew his pistol and fired.
No more Jesse James, no more Jesse James, for they laid poor Jesse in his grave. As he went to turn his head, little Bobby shot him dead. Then they laid poor Jesse in his grave.
Dirty little coward that shot Mr. Howard.
While music, recreations, sound effects, and other means were employed to keep the 2 hours and 45 minutes interesting listening, the point of the series was to rewrite, add to, straighten out a gray period in the history of Kentucky, and indeed in the history of America. So that's what The Silent Writers was all about.